from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Face the past, heal the future. That's the tagline of Van Jones' new CNN series, The Redemption Project, which puts victims of life-altering crimes face-to-face with their perpetrators.
I honestly do not know what's going to happen to people who have suffered every day for 20 years. Everybody's well-intentioned. Everybody thinks they've done the work. You don't know if the work has meant anything until you sit there and you look in the person's eyes.
The CNN political commentator and prison reform activist joins us to discuss the series, which explores punishment, forgiveness, and restorative justice. And we'll talk with him about criminal justice reform, politics, and more. That's next, after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Van Jones is a CNN political commentator and host of The Van Jones Show on CNN. But for years, the Bay Area knew him as a vocal criminal justice reform advocate and lawyer. And he was also head of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. Van Jones has a new series on CNN. It's called The Redemption Project, and it brings victims of crime or their families face to face with their offenders. In the latest episodes, he returns to Oakland and to the story of Donald Lacey, who is preparing to meet the man who murdered his daughter more than two decades ago.
You already been through a lot. For you to go and sit across from somebody who took your daughter's life, you don't have to do it, man.
That's what a lot of people have been telling me. Some have been even telling me, don't do it.
Why are you doing it?
I've been just imagining when we make eye contact for the first time, what's that gonna be like for him? And what's it gonna be like for me, you know? I'm not gonna bring her back, but I want to know it all. I have all these questions that I want to know. Why did they shoot off 40 rounds or whatever it was? Why were they so angry at this guy? Why? And there are some things I want to say to him that I've been carrying around.
Welcome back to Forum, Van Jones.
Good to be here. I was here 20 years ago when Loisha Lacey was killed, and I was marching behind Donald Lacey. I'm obviously an honor student, almost a picture-perfect kid in the wrong car at the wrong time, drive by, she dies. 20 years later, Donald Lacey's almost a household name in Oakland because of his great work. His slogan, Love Life, is now the slogan for Oakland. He never met the guy who was convicted for shooting his daughter.
That slogan, by the way, was his daughter's name.
Yeah, his daughter's name. And, Ibu, I think. So Donald Lacey wanted to sit down finally with the young man 20 years later, and we were able to film it. And it's a part of a series called The Redemption Project that we have 8 similar stories of people who, years after the crime, still have not found peace and want to have a conversation with the person who brought the harm into their lives. And not all the episodes end up warm and fuzzy, but it's breakthrough television in that. It's not true crime. It's not, who done it. We already know who did it. It's about the truth long after the crime, when there still has not been healing.
You do certainly get a lot of mileage, though, out of the suspense, waiting for the face-to-face and keep them 3 days away, 2 days away, and so forth. And it really kind of rocked me emotionally, and I think it will other viewers. Mm. It's an extraordinary story, and I remember, of course, when this occurred. It was a terrible tragedy, and you go behind the bars and you go behind the lives of both of these individuals. I wonder, let's talk about the series and what you hope to accomplish by it. There's been a good deal of talk about accountability, about restorative justice. They even have it in curriculum in schools now and so forth.
Yeah.
But the reality is some people speak rather cynically and say, well, a lot of these guys, they're looking for a parole, for example. Or a lot of those, for example, Donald Lacey wanted to meet the murderer of his child, but his wife wanted nothing to do with it.
True. Well, listen, everybody has, their own right to see it as they want to. The reality is that when people do these restorative justice dialogues or healing dialogues, or sometimes they're called victim-offender dialogues, by law, nothing that happens in that can be used in a parole hearing. So there's literally zero incentive for someone to do something like this in hopes that it's somehow going to lessen their sentence or get the, it literally has to be kept out. What that has done, is it's created this underground, beautiful movement of healers, People like Javier starring from Healing Dialogues down in Los Angeles. There's so many just unsung heroes and sheroes who've been doing this work, trying to find healing. And we put a lot of those facilitators on the air as well for the very first time.
You got access to the prison system, in pretty serious ways.
Yeah. I mean, you know, part of what's so remarkable about this show is it's 9 p.m. on Sundays on CNN. That is, you know, Anthony Bourdain's slot. So that's prime time. Nobody's ever seen this before. Jason Cohen, who was a director, is an Oscar-nominated...
also a local guy.
Yeah. Local guy. You know, he did Facing Fear. He was on your show, actually. One of the first people ever talked to him was you. Facing Fear, a former U.S. neo-Nazi who reconciled with a victim of his violence. That got an Oscar nomination, and I've known Jason for a long time. So we put this series together. Very proud that CNN is giving us the opportunity and space to do it. And for me, you know, listen, some people say, listen, forgiveness is not on the table for some of these cases. What we learned is forgiveness is not the point.
Well, I think you put it, you wanted to put medicine in a sick system.
Yes, sir. I think it's hard for people to understand. When you watch these true crime stories and you say, okay, well, you know, the left-wing version of it is exonerating somebody who didn't do it. And then the right-wing version is like, you know, let's catch the killer. But all this true crime stuff, at the end of the day, you assume that if you get the right verdict, then everybody's happy and justice has been done. The truth is, the truth long after the crime, is that the family members of someone who was lost to violence, they don't know what happened. All they have is a police report. Often the person doesn't testify. They plead the fifth. They take a deal, and that's it. And you are sitting there 10 years later, 20 years later. You do not know what happened to your family member. So just the idea that you are in an emotional prison of unknowing for decades, and the person who has the key to your cell is actually sitting in a real prison cell, you know, maybe 20 miles away, and you can't find each other, is so... that was a big discovery for us in this series. And so people have contacted victim services. They're initiating it. The people who are victimized by the crime, the surviving family members, they initiate it. But we film it. And I tell you, some of the reviewers are saying they don't know what to write. It's that powerful.
It was very emotional.
They literally don't have the language and the literacy to describe grace and empathy and compassion and just all the things that are playing across the faces of these people. We're actually having to help the reviewers review it because they literally just, they can't even describe what they're seeing. It's just that beautiful.
Well, Donald Lacey wanted to see his killer of his kid face to face.
He
was trying to get eye contact when the kid went on trial and he couldn't get eye contact with him. The kid wouldn't make eye contact. But the killer, Christopher Smith, actually came in and started, I don't want to give too many spoilers here, but he came in and started sobbing, you know, and the guy had gone through some real, obviously, self-work. I mean, he was a kid off of Oakland, a kid who was eating condiments, you know.
Out of a trash can.
I mean, a terribly impoverished life and everything. And, you know, people can talk about... a couple things got to me. I want to talk about this.
Yes, sir.
When he said, when Donald Lacey said, there is no closure. I mean, you know, for people who lose children, I thought, you know, how can you talk about closure realistically in any way? I've said that on the air a number of times, and certainly I was hit by that when he... And when Christopher Smith said, you know, I was just a follower. I was just a kid, you know, a 16-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, these things grab at you.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, you wonder, what do they get out of it? I mean... I actually kept asking that question inwardly, even though I was moved by it.
Yeah.
You know, what does the victim get out of it? And what, because like I said, his wife didn't even want to go into this.
Yeah, they didn't want to do it. And we've had that in many of the episodes.
And by the way, I was also left a little bereft at the fact that there were four others who put 40 to 50 rounds of into the car where this young girl tragically died. And the irony of her friend wanted to be in the front seat, but she was in the front seat. I mean, there's just all kinds of nuances to this.
Yeah.
But I was just struck by the fact that one of the answers that he really wanted is, why 40, 50 rounds? What motivated you?
Well, I, without giving away too much of it, because I do think people will get a lot out of watching this series, you know, I think that where we are in the culture is that forgiveness is empathy. It's just not fashionable. It's not trendy. It's all about the call-out culture. It's all about the cancel culture.
And maybe we become too secular, you think?
It's certainly too cynical, if not too secular. I mean, I'm certainly a person of faith, and there are a lot of people in the Bay Area that are, you know, quote-unquote spiritual but not religious, who are struggling with these issues. But I just think there's something going on where it's cooler for me to just dismiss someone I disagree with, or even block them, or even unfriend an actual friend of mine, unfriend them on Facebook because of something that they said or something they posted, than it is to really try to listen. And so what we wanted to do was go 180 degrees the opposite direction with the Redemption Project and find the people. It's the toughest for them to communicate because there's been a personal transgression, and show them trying. And we say, what do you get out of it? That's such a big question. What do you get out of it?
Well, it's self-selective to begin with.
Well, sure, self-selective because, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people who, you know, wouldn't want to do it. And we're not saying that people should. It's not a should show. It's not saying you should do it. You should forgive. And all the way, also, don't try this at home. We have trained facilitators. It's a big production. But it is a could show. Could you do this? And what do people get out of it? The people who have done wrong, who have caused harm, often... And it's 10 years later, it's 20 years later, they have a deep desire to atone. They have a deep desire to ask for forgiveness. And often you got to remember, when they did the crime, they may have been 16, 19 years old. They're a different person 10 years later, 20 years later. But they're not allowed to by law. They cannot contact the person that they hurt. And that's to protect the people who they hurt. So they sit there with this desire to confess, to atone, to show that they learned. And they're not able to do it. So they get something out of that, even if they don't ever get out of prison. The family members, even those who don't forgive, what they get information. What happened? Really, what was my loved one's last word? Did you guys know each other? Were you in a gang? Were you set up to do this? Were you paid to do this? What happened? And those are things that can never come out in a court proceeding because of the Fifth Amendment and because of the way that the plea deals work.
And sometimes they don't get those answers because the memories don't work.
Exactly. So there's no guarantees. And the thing about this series, is that, you talk about the suspense and the tension, in the show. The suspense and the tension for us doing the show was 100 times worse because we didn't even know while we were shooting this. Sometimes is the family member even going to show up?
I saw that look on your face when you had your headphones on.
Yeah, exactly. Like you think you have tension watching it? Think about us doing it. We didn't even know if CNN would ever.
It was in
air.
Your countenance. We're talking to Van Jones, by the way, and we're going to talk with him about some other things in the course of the time we have with him here. But the Redemption Project is an 8-part series that airs Sunday nights at 6 and 9 p.m. and is available on demand. And I should mention that Van Jones is also CEO of Reform Alliance, which advocates for criminal justice reform. And he's been a longtime warrior in that arena, now bringing it to the television and bringing it to CNN. Let's talk about the first episode, because we're talking about Donna Lacey because it's local and it has a lot of resonance here. But the first episode actually... is a woman who never really knew her mother. Her mother was taken from her when she was a child. What did she need to do this for? What would she want to know?
Well, that was the first one that we did, and we did that one totally rogue, totally renegade. We didn't have permission from CNN. I can say it now, but at the risk of my job, we just went and shot it. Jason Cohen and others had discovered this story, and
took some courage.
So we just filmed it. The first one is so rough compared to the later ones. And there's not a facilitator visible in the shot. We just put them next to each other and hope it works out. And there's a rawness to that one. I cried so hard afterwards that my nose started bleeding. I mean, it was just, and we took that footage to CNN with trembling hands. This is what we did. This is what we found. This is what we saw. And Amy Antelis, who I will always, praise, rather than scolding me and telling me that I'm no longer employed there, said, if you can go find 6 or 7 more of these, we might put it on the air. And that's at, Citizen Jones, which is not my company, but it has the same name as me, and Magic Labs Media, run by Jana Carter, went out and working with this existing network. It's the other thing. There's these diamonds in our society that never get a chance to shine. The people behind bars who have transformed themselves, they're diamonds. The people who are helping them, the healers, all these people never get a chance to shine. And so we get this restorative justice network activated to help this show. And we reveal their work, this kind of magical, miraculous healing work to the country through this show. And I'm just so proud to be a part of it because, I'm barely in the show. I mean, because the characters are so compelling that, I kind of ask them a few questions, but they speak for themselves. And this is not reality television. Every word that comes out of the mouth of people on this show is an authentic expression of somebody trying to get out of hell.
But you have to edit, don't you, for time?
Well, I edit, I move it forward. But just think about that, though. Reality TV, can you say that again? More anger, more passion. Blah, blah, blah. There's nothing real about reality television. This is the real deal. This is just honest people. And again, when you see the face, there's more going on in their expressions and in the silence of the show than anything they actually say. Because nobody's seen this show like this before, so nobody knows how to act. There's no play acting. There's none of the BS with reality TV. This is as raw as you can get. And CNN is putting on the air at 9 o'clock on Sundays. We're pretty proud of it.
Well, speaking of reality TV and you're crying to the point of nosebleeds, I have to ask you, I went back and looked at that video of you recognizing that Trump was possibly going to win and breaking up emotionally and essentially saying, what am I going to tell my children?
Yeah.
What have you told your children?
Well, you know, unfortunately, they were watching that night. So, you know, they were on the West Coast. We were on the East Coast. They were still awake. Look, I've told them that this is what happens when both political parties get far from their principles. You know, the Republican Party is supposed to be the party of Lincoln, supposed to be the party, you know, the Republican Party was born as an anti-slavery party. And now they're the party of Steve Bannon all too often. And frankly, the Democratic Party is supposed to be the party of Shirley Chisholm and FDR and all those great folks. But sometimes it feels like if you don't have, you know, 19 PhDs and eat kale every day, you can't really fit into the conversation among Democrats anymore. And so when both parties get so far away from what they're supposed to be about, bad things happen. But the reality is there's awesome people in both parties, and there's awesome people in all races, and we just have to get the awesome people back together so the awful people don't keep taking over.
Well, I want to talk more about the Restorative Justice Project with you, the Redemption Project, excuse me, which again airs Sundays at 6 and 9. But we talk a little politics as long as we've brought it up and moved into that terrain.
Yes, sir.
Interested in what your thoughts are, particularly about, now former Vice President Biden saying he's going to take a middle course on climate change, and he's opened himself up to all of those other candidates going after him. What kind of impact do you think that's having?
Well, we're very far out. Nobody gets a chance to vote until February, so it's not like we.
It's too far out, really, to make any tea leaf stuff. But I think it's it's concern to people that he would take such a rhetorical statement, say I'm taking a middle course on climate change.
Well, listen, when you're going 90 miles an hour toward a steel wall, there's no middle course. You know, I'm going to slow down to 30 miles an hour. You're going to be just as dead. You've got to turn course. And, I was disappointed to hear that from Vice President Biden. Obviously, I worked for him in the Obama White House on his middle class task force. I have a great deal of respect for him. But that was not just ill-considered. I mean, it wasn't just ill-advised. It was ill-considered. We are criminals every day against our own grandchildren, against our own children, that we don't take dramatic action to do something about climate change.
He's getting a lot of blowback now from progressives, particularly because he doesn't seem to be behind the Green New Deal. And I think you're getting some blowback, aren't you? Because you worked on that bipartisan criminal justice reform bill with the first act with the Trump. What are you hearing from progressives on this?
Well, you know, some are mad because there is a fear that any cooperation with the Trump administration on any issue might strengthen an authoritarian movement in this country that would be, you know, terrible for democracy and for everything else. However, I see it differently in that, for 99 issues, I've been the big, as you said, you know, the white lash comment, you know, 99 issues, I've been his toughest critic on television. But there are a couple of issues, whether you're talking about people who are trapped in prisons, people who are trapped in addiction and poor mental health, and people who are trapped in generational poverty, that frankly neither party has done much for generations. We talk about it, but we don't do that much about it. And where there is any overlap or common ground that helps those on the bottom. I've never met anybody in prison who said, I want to get out of prison. Please help me get out of prison. But whatever you do, don't talk to any Republicans. Donald Trump has 200,000 federal prisoners, human beings who are in federal prison, in the palm of his hand. He can crush them, or he could pardon them all and let them go. And he's crazy enough to do either one. And so I felt, and I continue to feel, that the people behind bars didn't lose that election. And they deserve the same advocacy with Trump in the White House as with Obama, as with Clinton or anybody else. And if we decide that people who can't vote and who didn't lose the election cannot get advocacy and cannot get representation until Democrats win elections, we are dooming half the, you know, we're dooming, you know, millions of people, and certainly in the federal system, hundreds of thousands of people, to suffering that's not fair, not their fault. I'm proud that the bill that we passed is going to bring 4,000 people home this year, properly implemented, who've been stuck in prison with these outdated crack cocaine laws. 25,000 people are going to have shorter sentences going through the system this year than would have otherwise. 100% of the women are going to no longer be shackled when they're giving birth to babies. So good things came out of the bill. But listen, this is tough stuff. What do you do?
Well, can you also work again across party lines and other? I mean, talk about infrastructure, mm-hmm. you know, left and right in terms of working across party lines. Is this a plausible thing in terms of, I mean, because it's so polarized and so extreme in the polarization?
Well, listen, people are afraid and people are hurt and people are scared and people are being triggered and traumatized every day by somebody who often acts like the bully in chief more than the commander in chief. And so I understand that fear. And I understand the sense that, well, if somebody, you know, validates that person, that they're going to be in a weaker position. However, the way that I see it is, at least on criminal justice, getting more Republicans to own the issue protects Democrats. The more that Donald Trump is saying, I'm for criminal justice reform, the less likely he is to come out with those Willie Horton ads and the fear-mongering and the demonizing. And so the fact that we were able to get 87 senators, including the majority of Republican senators, to sign on, the vast majority of Republican Congress people to sign on to bipartisan criminal justice reform means that on the issue of criminal justice, it could be a bipartisan issue in the election, which means a Kamala Harris or a Beto or Mayor Pete, whoever's running, the Democrats are going to run a criminal justice champion. I'd rather have Donald Trump saying me too on criminal justice and therefore protecting us than have Donald Trump saying, well, these people are going to open the prison gates and flood your communities with crime. And so these are tough questions. But I'm willing to take the heat. I will work with or against any Republican or any Democrat to get people out of prison. I've been committed to it for 25 years. I had to work against Democrats in California, including ones who've come around like Jerry Brown and others. But when they were pro-mass incarceration, I was anti-mass incarceration back in the 90s. And so I will work with or against any Democrat or any Republican to get people out of prison.
We just had Emily Bazelon on last week, in fact, and she said the main problem with mass incarceration is prosecutorial power. You agree?
That's a huge problem because now these prosecutors, you know, will give you 800 charges, 80 charges, 70 charges, 26 charges, and make you plead to at least one. Well, all you got to do is plead to one felony, and guess what? You're branded with that F word for the rest of your life. And most people just do not have the ability to stand up to it, and they don't have the resources, and the risks are too high.
Bernie Sanders says felons should vote. You agree?
Absolutely, they should vote. And I'll tell you why. There's a reason that Senator Sanders, who I also know very well, hasn't raised, which should be raised. When the census is done, they count in all these red counties where all these prisons are, they count the prisoners' bodies toward the representation that they get in Congress, but they don't count their votes. They're not allowed to vote. Well, hold on a second. So you're taking mostly poor black and brown people from blue cities, putting them, so therefore you diminish the voting power in those cities. Then you put those people out in red counties and you inflate their representation in Congress, but those people can't vote. Look, America, you got to pick. If their bodies count for the census, their vote should count on Election Day. If their votes don't count on Election Day, their bodies shouldn't count for the census. But right now, they want it both ways, and that's wrong.
Talking with Van Jones, and he's host of the Redemption Project and the Van Jones Show on CNN. He's also CEO of Reform Alliance, which advocates for the criminal justice reform. And we'll come back and talk more about that and more politics. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking with Van Jones. He's host of the Redemption Project and the Van Show on CNN. He's also CEO of Reform Alliance, which advocates for criminal justice reform. I wanted to ask just a little bit, get your take on, well, I don't want to get into the horse race here, but what's interesting now is Mayor Pete is moved up to, I think, second most recently in the polls. But he's getting a lot of support, obviously, from highly educated white people. He's not getting that much support from the black community, frankly. Mm-hmm. And one has to wonder, you know, in this race, who between Kamala Harris, who has been criticized for some of her prosecutorial zealotry and all the rest of that, or stances that she's taken, as well as Cory Booker, or, well, I'm also thinking about, you've got at least three African-American candidates in the race. Who's going to be able to draw the black vote?
You know, I think it remains to be seen. You put Biden in there as well. I mean, because Biden does, he has that name recognition and the record with Obama. I think that, you know, Mayor Pete's got a lot of room to grow. You know, he's, I mean, nobody can pronounce his name today. Nobody knew who he was.
Buttigieg.
Exactly, Buttigieg. I had him on my show. He was remarkable.
I had him on this show, too. And he's a very likable, thoughtful, calm. In fact, you know, he reminds a lot of people of Obama with that calm. And
yeah, he's got the right demeanor, and he'll be around for a long time. Maybe, yeah, maybe it's time to do something. We got to.
They're already attacking him, which is a sign that his political star is rising.
Exactly. He must be doing well. He's starting to get attacked. But I mean, here's what I think in terms of the African-American community. The African-American female vote, 96% against Trump. African-American male vote, 88% against Trump. That's as close to unanimous as you're going to get outside of North Korea. You know, and frankly, African-American male voters, think about this now, 9 out of 10 black male voters voted to have a woman be commander-in-chief. For all the issues of sexism and stuff like that in all of our communities, only 4 out of 10 white women were willing to vote for a woman to be commander-in-chief. 9 out of 10 black male voters are willing to have a female commander-in-chief. So the strength of this party is really with the African-American women, with black men pulling up, you know, right second. You're not going to outvote black women, but right behind. And I think that the question about which way this community goes is important. I don't think it's going to be strictly based on skin color. I don't think, you know, a Cory Booker can count on X number of votes because he's black. I think it's a very sophisticated community politically.
And as you say, they like Biden.
And they like Biden. I think Mayor Pete's got a lot of room to grow, and I think he knows he's got to grow. And I think he's smart enough to figure it out. And he can make a generational play. And I think, you know, Kamala, who if Kamala Harris were commander-in-chief, I would sleep well every night because she's just tough as they come. But she's got to climb a wall of some suspicion from younger voters around her criminal justice record as a prosecutor. So this is going to be a very, very complex calculation among black voters. And it's not going to be as simple as this person's black, they're going to get the vote.
I'll ask you a question about Kamala, though, because in the Kavanaugh hearings, she sounded very much not only like the tough prosecutor she is and was, but also like she had the goods on Kavanaugh in terms of private conversations. No follow-up. It was smoke and mirrors.
Well, you know, we don't have any perfect candidates, unfortunately. I will say that if you look at, I mean, Kamala probably has the strongest pathway electorally because she'll almost certainly do very well here in California, and she'll probably do very well in the South. So she's going to be with us, I think, you know, to the very end, and she may be at the top of the ticket. And so, you know, but she's got, just like everybody else, she's got her things she's got to deal with. She was a mixed bag for us on criminal justice. We loved Kamala. She did a lot of, she was talking about smart on crime when that wasn't popular. She ran some programs that were really good. She also did stuff that drove us up the wall. And so she's got to come back around and explain all of that. But I think that she can. I do think that she can, and I hope that she will.
Let me get back to the whole story about Christopher Smith and Donald Lacey, the story here in Oakland that you did in the Redemption Project. There's one point where Christopher Smith, and he says something that probably a lot of criminals feel very deeply. I am not my crime. Mm-hmm. And he says it with real feeling, with real, I got, you know, the sense that he was speaking deep from the heart and all. But there are many people who feel you are your crime. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I found myself responding and thinking, what about those four other young thugs who were in the car with him who did the shooting as well, who never came to justice? He was sort of, in some ways,
a scapegoat.
Well, he was a scapegoat, I suppose you could say. But at the same time, there are many people who feel, you know, once you commit the crime, you become the crime. Yeah. As much as they might feel compassion for the criminal, and they don't want to let go of that.
You know, I don't think any of us would want to be known forever only by the worst mistake we ever made, or the dumbest thing we ever did, or the meanest thing that we ever said. I mean, you know, it's easy for us to kind of project all of our, you know, anger and animosity onto some individual who's been accused of something. But the reality is, if I told you right now, for the past 3 months, we've been secretly videotaping every moment of your life, and we're now going to show that to the world, you would be quite embarrassed, because none of us are as good as we want to be at all times. And some people get caught and some people don't. And, you know, for instance, I went to Yale Law School. I said many times, I saw more kids doing drugs at Yale than I ever saw in a housing project. None of those people at Yale ever saw a police officer. They never got arrested. So they're not called drug felons, even though they broke drug laws. And yet so many kids from housing projects doing fewer drugs are labeled drug felons forever, and that's all they're going to be called by way too many people. And so we've got to get to a point where people can at least earn their way back by making real changes, by atoning. And if we don't, the problem is the United States now, we're so punitive. We've got 2 point some million people behind bars, another 4 plus million people under probation and parole, the biggest incarceration industry in the world. China only has 1 million people behind bars. They got 1 billion people. We have 6 million people under correctional control, and we only have 300 million people. And so when you have the biggest punishment industry in the world, there's something that seeps into the culture. And you've got to start to pull back and remember that redemption is possible for everyone. And the minute you make a mistake, you're gonna want that redemption, that second chance.
I feel you're on a mission here. Tell me if I'm wrong. Yeah. I feel that the mission has something to do with, you talk about putting medicine back into the system and all that, but it's not only accountability, it's also a sense that healing and grace are possible.
Yeah. I see the Redemption Project as sort of my sermon. If you'll allow
me. You could have been a preacher, you know.
Well, hey, listen, I come from a line of them, but I see the Reform Alliance as my ministry, for lack of a better term, in that, you know, we're changing laws. I'm so proud to be a part of the Dream Corps and the Cut 50 campaign. That campaign has helped to pass 18 bipartisan criminal justice measures in the past 18 months, plus the First Step Act at the federal level. I'm working every day. People see me on TV. They think I'm just a TV guy. I love you because you know me my whole career, and you know the TV stuff is accidental. The activism is purposeful and consistent and persistent. And I've been in this chair many times, and I'm glad to have a chance to come back. But the TV show is an opportunity to shine a light on a conversation that you and I have been having and other people have been having for a long time about how can we have more human freedom, more human dignity in a country with this many different kind of people, this many problems. We got to start with people at the bottom, the people who are locked up, the people who don't have anything.
But too many say when you look at the top, it becomes very depressing.
Yeah, it becomes very depressing. And that's frankly, honestly, that's why I did the show, because you know, we're just doing tweet-based food fights at the top, and yet people at the bottom have to heal and have to figure this stuff out. I want to put them on television, and that's what the Redemption Project is all about.
Well, congratulations on it. I indeed think it's very well worth watching, and we'll say to the listeners that they should see it. We get emotionally rocked by it, but thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. 9 p.m. on Sundays.